Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
How you doing today, Kim? Well, it's early here in the Mountain Standard Time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But happy to be here. Really excited for this episode. But Kara, tell us about what you've been up to this week, because I felt very alone.
I've been gallivanting the United States, apparently. I had two keynotes. I was in Salt Lake City and then Washington State, like Moses Lake area, Washington State. And I always try to squeeze in some time to myself. And by time to myself, I mean I got sick. I had a fever. But I also planned, you know, places I could eat because food is life. And I planned some hikes. And yeah, it was a little crazy, but super fun and very, very rewarding. My favorite part of my job, well, my favorite two parts of my job are this, the podcast, recording, reaching people in this way, and then doing keynotes. So I know that's something you love as well.
I do. I really do. But tell everybody about the picture that you sent me. I edited right away.
Yes. Well, I saw buffaloes. Jeez. So I know. I went when I was in Salt Lake, I realized that right there in Salt Lake is a beautiful park that has buffaloes, and it's Antelope Island State Park, and it backs up to, you know, the Rocky Mountains, beautiful views. And so I took a lot of photos of buffaloes with the mountain background. I would say no less than 50 photos of buffaloes. And out of those, there are about five that were pretty good. And I sent some to Kim, and she immediately edits them in like her Photos app, because she's a wizard, and sends them back to me. So you can see, well, I'm sure we'll post one on Instagram. Just hasn't happened yet, but there is one on my Instagram. So one of the new things I've been doing over on my social is every week I've just been posting a bunch of photos from the previous week. And so you can see that on my most recent photo dump post. There's, I think the cover photo is the buffalo. So it was really cool. They were just so chill. They're just wandering around doing their buffalo thing.
What did the buffalo say to his son when he was leaving for college?
I don't know. What?
Bye, son.
I feel like I've been holding on to that one, waiting for it. I feel like this is a bit that we should probably do, because I bet I can talk my son into telling some of his jokes. He has some epic jokes.
Yeah.
It'd be a fun.
I've heard some of them. They're fantastic. I love when they're trying to figure out exactly how they land or if they make sense.
Yeah.
But their comedic timing is getting like on point.
Yeah. I think his current favorite one is, how do you know what time to go to the dentist? 2:30. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my favorite is one that we learned from the Google speaker, and it was, it's gone. I just know the punchline is butt quack.
That's all we really need to know.
It's about ducks and their feathers, and they cover their butt quack.
Number three came up to me and was like, Mommy, did you hear about that guy who died from one of his electronics? I was like, no. Yeah, shocking. And then, no, Carrot, then he does this, la-da-da-da-da, and like fades away. I was like, oh, I have succeeded at parenting.
I don't know. That might be my kid.
The la-da-da-da-da is just bombs dropped.
Like, wait, that one.
La-da-da-da. So I've spent my week, you know, watching Kara's pictures come in and sitting in a darkened room.
I know.
Editing all of the things, holding the fort down.
And I was very little help.
However, in this, I haven't really been making any videos or content. I've been writing, which felt great because I haven't done that in a long time and I've missed it because I love doing it. But then it's just like, you have to be in the right headspace, at least for me. I know there's those really disciplined writers who can sit down and be like, I'm going to write whatever comes to my mind for the next 2 hours. Well, that's not me. The conditions must be perfect.
But it's very cathartic too.
It is. And I got some of my thoughts that have been ruminating down on paper, on blog, on places where it mattered and it could help. And it was great. One of the other things, though, that I did come across that we have been sending memes about back and forth is the potential TikTok shutdown. And
I just have to say, the hearings are an absolute farce. Like, you watch it, you're like, this is the best our country has to offer.
Cool. We are not sending our best.
I just feel so bad for Mr. Chu, because he's just sitting there and he's just looks so confused. Like, he's so, so nice, but so confused by the questions they're asking. Like,
aren't we all?
Yes.
Like, please convert this Word document to a PDF before you get to ask your question next. Yes, right. We're connecting to the Wi-Fi. Do you know what that is, or do you need your grandchild to figure it out for you? I was just blown away by the idiocy of some of these questions, and they think that they are landing their points. And you know what? For some of the audience that's going to be watching, they probably are.
So embarrassing.
It was so mind-blowing. But then I'm like, this is a complete charade to detract from some of the actually big problems that we have. Why are we focused on a freaking app when you've got a lot more stuff that's going on right here in our country that is harming innocent people every single day?
I've seen some really compelling videos, one of whom is from our next guest, but I've seen some really compelling videos that talk about why it's happening and, you know, how it's kind of just a distraction and how they're not going after everyone. It's like TikTok is just, you know, they're the scapegoat, basically, and they're the testing ground. But most importantly, how they're picking on TikTok because TikTok doesn't line their pockets, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think Katie, our guest today, is going to support this. And you can watch her videos when you go find her, because you'll want to go find her after this episode if you don't already follow her. She has videos about it and how there's a lot of CSAM. So we'll talk about that here as well. But it's no longer child pornography. It is child sexual assault material. Mm-hmm. So feel free to correct people if you hear them say that wrong. Children cannot consent to pornographic material being taken of them. So pornography is a misnomer, and pornography is actually protected as well underneath the law. So it's important that we call it what it is. But a lot of CSAM material is found on Twitter, on Pinterest, on Facebook, and on Instagram. And a lot of material is found on these other social media sites, and those social media sites also pay for lobbying and they do a lot of things. So just, I encourage you, like everything that we encourage you to do, to look at these things with a critical mind and think about it as not just black and white, and think about what could be the motivating factor, I guess, for these people attacking TikTok solely as opposed to these other avenues. Because I know for Kim and I, TikTok has been, yeah, it has its days, but it's been an overwhelmingly positive thing. And I think seeing it come down could be something that would be very detrimental, because it's something that's very different than the other social media networks.
It's the first place that I found that is not heavily curated in favor of just aesthetics. Yeah. There is a component to that, of course. But what I've found is that for people like us who are there sharing our stories of things that are not toxic positivity all the time, we actually are finding a community. We are finding the people that we need to find, and they are finding us. And it's built this ability to connect in a way that no other social platform has allowed us to do in the past. I mean, I've actively lobbied on TikTok and successfully impacted state-level bills here in Colorado. Now, I know that's not the case for everybody, but it does give us access to information, right, wrong, or indifferent, that we wouldn't otherwise have. When it is controlled by people who control the money, then, you know, you're going to have a lot of interference there. This is one place where if you are willing to do the research and do your own due diligence and think critically, it can be a wealth of information. And that is really the point that Katie keeps driving home. She wants you to do your own research. Just like Kara and I constantly tell our listeners and everybody that's here, we're going to give you information. It's up to you to decide if or how you want to use that. You don't have to align with everything everyone says all of the time. And if you do, that means that you're not having critical thinking skills. We want you to do that. Katie does a really great job of giving you information, the tools to talk about it, and tons of resources. Her link tree, which, by the way, she forgets to mention, her handle is at the TikTok Advocate, and that's on Instagram and on TikTok. But you can click on her link tree and all the calls to action, all the bills that she talks about, all the things that you need to activate yourself, your friends, your family, your platforms, your community, are all right there in her bio. So make sure that you're checking that out. She is a wealth of information. I loved this conversation. When I sent her the draft to review, she wrote back. She's like, our chemistry is just chef's kiss. I wish I would have been recording. I don't know how long we were on our call.
Like a whole other hour after just talking.
We should have been recording it. And I'm frustrated because I'm like, oh my God, there was so much great stuff that we were talking about. But we've got to have her back on.
For sure.
Guys, Katie is going places and she's taking everyone with her. And I just adore her and her stance and her voice. I hope you enjoy this conversation and having it as much as we did. Like Kara said, we are going to be discussing childhood abuse. See, Sam, we want you to take extra care with this one. It can be really heavy, but Katie just does an incredible job of embracing the little people in her own life, in our lives, in everyone's lives, and making sure that moving forward, they can be safe and protected and that they have a voice.
Yeah, I love her so much. And this community that we're building, of which all of you are part of which Katie is part of, she just does such a beautiful job of, like Kim said, bringing everybody else up, which is just one of the things we're super passionate about. And it's just linking arms with the people that are beside us and bringing them up with us. And so y'all are going to love this conversation. I think you're going to learn so much and can't wait for you to hear it.
Katie Ray is a childhood sexual abuse survivor and advocate to the sexually exploited and human trafficked. She uses her social media to educate, elevate survivor stories, and uses public pressure to invoke change.
All right, here's our conversation with Katie.
Stop laughing at me. You do it.
Thanks for joining us. I have never been on this podcast before, but I'm going to introduce us.
Please do. Take it away, Katie. Seriously, go for it. Oh my
God. All right. So our guest today is Katie, and I'm so happy that she's here. I think you're going to love this conversation. But first things first, we have to do our icebreaker. So Katie, what is the last thing that you binged, either watched or listened to? And it's like shameless here. We're not going to shame you, probably.
Probably.
So the last thing I binged, and I'm still in the middle of binging, I'm into season two, is Designated Survivor on Netflix.
Oh.
I don't know what that is. I just write this down.
It's Kiefer Sutherland.
It's really only if you have the capacity to dive into governmental conspiracy content. And it is a little close to home, because a lot of the content is pre-existing American history content that has taken place and is rolling over into today's time. So again, it's only if you have the capacity to navigate that and all the bullshit that's happening in real life on the internet every single day. So check your mental health while you're watching it, but it's pretty great.
Meanwhile, I'll be rewatching episodes of The Office over here and drooling on myself.
Yeah,
please do.
I'm listening to Under the Tuscan Sun, the audiobook.
I love that.
Under the Tuscan Sun is my comfort movie, and I'm going to Italy. So I'm like,
I love that. When are you going?
In May. I'm going on a retreat. So I'm like, without children or husband. And
she's looking for a very specific white flowy dress as well. So we have to make sure that she's appropriately outfitted.
Yeah.
I love that.
Have you seen Under the Tuscan Sun?
I've not.
Well, see, me either. Apparently, we need a watch party.
Like, it's not streaming anywhere right now, so it's very inconvenient for me to talk about it. So, you know, good luck. You can get a DVD of it.
Okay.
But know what is streaming? Shameless plug.
Oh, yeah. This podcast and my movie. What's the name of it, though?
No. Where can you find it? We're going to get to the actual content, Katie.
All right. So, go ahead, Kim.
Tell us a little bit, to your comfort level, of course, just about yourself, your story, and what leads you here.
Yeah. So my story starts at birth. I was born in a religious cult and experienced over a decade of sexual abuse at the hand of a family member. Sexual abuse was rampant in this cult. It was the expectation that what happened in the cult was brought home and duplicated into the cultures of each cult member's family. And it was normal. So what was normal in our family was also duplicated in our relationships, and all of my siblings and I participated in peer-on-peer abuse. And it wasn't until we recognized what was taking place was not okay through the Good Touch, Bad Touch video that we all separated from peer-on-peer abuse and started desperately seeking people to recognize that we were walking red flags for abuse and started seeking out help. This is why I'm so passionate in my adult life about advocating for the sexually exploited, the human trafficked, bringing awareness to parents and minors about red flags, but mostly about creating legislation that would require teachers to be trauma-informed care trained nationwide so fewer and fewer children like my siblings and I fall through the cracks. And now I use my social media platforms to offer this education. I've had the honor of being able to advise the White House, several White House committees, the Senate, the Department of Justice, and Homeland Security on how pervasive the exploitation of minors online is. And I get to have incredible conversations with amazing human beings like you, where we continue the conversation of education and freedom on the other side of trauma.
I love that. Well, holy crap. I know. So much, like so much to unpack there. And I think that very often with childhood abuse, because it's normalized in a home or because of there's this secrecy, like secrecy is built into childhood abuse specifically. And because of that secrecy that's built in, I think very often people who were victims of abuse as a child don't realize that they were victims until they have that kind of aha moment at some point in their life. But it sounds like you were still young when you made that realization.
Yeah, our aha moment was watching the Good Touch, Bad Touch video. We were told specifically in school we were not allowed to watch it. Our parents signed a waiver saying our children cannot watch this video. They rented it on VHS, showed it to us at home, and then gaslit the fuck out of us, explaining how the culture in our home is not what this video is portraying. What's happening here is for different reasons, and you have to understand that. Where all of us children recognized in our tiny little people souls that there was now a word for what was happening to us, and it was called sexual abuse. And we immediately no longer wanted to participate in being abused, abusing one another, or furthering the trauma onto our friends. Now recognizing the harm and the hurt that had been done to us and we were passing it on to others felt devastating to know that this wasn't okay, it wasn't normal, and it wasn't happening in other households except because of our hands. So it took a lot of navigating that information for the first time with zero resource and outlet to process it with, because our parents' version of it was not this video's version of it. So we, as very little people, are trying to secretly navigate truth on our own through libraries and through the internet, trying to discover what it is that we've just uncovered for the very first time that had happened to us, called sexual abuse. And once we recognized exactly how pervasive what was happening to us was, my sister finally got up the courage to tell our childhood therapist, and everything changed from there.
Wow. I'm speechless, which does not happen very often. I'm wondering, though, there's so many complexities and interfamilial stuff aside, like just being a tiny human enduring something like this can leave you so broken and confused. What did the conversations look like between you and your siblings and that first outcry? Where did you feel that relief that everyone talks about, or did you?
It took us a really, really long time to have individual conversations with one another, navigating what those looked like. And each one of our relationships are different because each of our healing journeys have been different. And some of us still haven't processed to the magnitude that others have, and those are their journeys to tell and their stories to tell and their healing journeys to walk through. So the conversations have sounded different for each of us, but my sister and I have gone full send into our healing journey, so much so that we speak at anti-human trafficking conferences together. And we just talked at a high school in our hometown a few weeks ago, training teachers about the signs and the symptoms that often look like attention-seeking behaviors that really are signs of potentially active abuse or previous abuse that are now manifesting in trauma response. And it was so full circle for us that we've been asked to come back and speak to the students there, offering resources and telling their story and giving them a chance to really find a safe adult where they can connect and get some support as well. But that dynamic has looked so different between each of my siblings because everyone's in such a different place in their life. And I wish for each of them the same kind of freedom my sister and I have found.
Now, forgive me if this is an ignorant question. How many siblings do you have?
I have five brothers and one sister.
Five brothers and one sister. Awesome.
Yeah.
So when you were talking about what you experienced as a child, my first thought is, and we will definitely circle back around to the most asked question, which I'm sure you get all the time, which is how do we talk to our children? How do we protect our children? We will come back to that. But I think about how one of the things we often tell children is to have a safe person. We try to instill what a safe person looks like. And I think what it sounds like you experienced is that you didn't really have a safe person to talk to whenever this is happening, because your natural safe people would be your parents, right? Mm. People that are in your extended family, and it didn't sound like they were safe. And I feel like our goal is to help as many people feel seen as possible. And I'm just wondering if you can speak to what it meant to almost go at this alone. Yes, as a little person, but I think a lot of people feel like they're going at this alone at some point in their journey.
Yeah. If I'm 100% honest, in the throes of what was normalized inside of our home, there were times where it was just normal. It was just expected. It was scheduled abuse before breakfast, scheduled abuse after lunch, scheduled abuse after homework. It was just a part of the everyday existence. And you become so desensitized, even to the part of you that's screaming for it to stop, that eventually there is no fear of no one's coming to save me. This is normal. Until it comes to a point where you are old enough to recognize those feelings and those sensations rising up again, saying, please protect this vessel. Please, with everything inside of you, fight back, say no, walk away, run, hide. At that point, when those feelings started coming back again and my spirit was screaming for retribution, I felt the most alone I've ever felt in my entire life. And that was the point at which I started using drugs to try and cope. So I'm 11 years old. I'm actively using drugs and alcohol in school. My teachers had the same concept that most teachers in the 90s had with this behavior, which was, this is delinquency. Like, this is wrong crowd behavior, falling in with the wrong crowd, when the reality is most people who are in the wrong crowd have not been seen for the struggles they're having, and they're simply trying to survive and cope. And that was me, trying to survive and trying to cope. At 11 years old, coming to school drunk and high should have been a massive red flag that CPS should have intervened, and it didn't happen. Nobody saw what was taking place, and it was very, very lonely. There was a tremendous amount of bullying that took place because of my change in hygiene, my change in wardrobe, my change in attendance, my lack of stability in grades, my lack of stability in school. We moved schools constantly, and there was never an opportunity for me to settle in, to make friends, and to find out who I was as a person, because my primary trauma response was to fawn. And if anybody doesn't know, the trauma responses, you have fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Fawn is the one that doesn't get talked about the most, but I think this is the one that's the most important for teachers to know. If you have a student that has a radical change in hygiene and is changing from trend to trend to trend to trend to trend, different personality types, different clothing, wardrobe styles, that was me. And I did that subconsciously as an opportunity to make friends with someone and to not seem like I was a threat, because I did not want to be perceived as someone easy to abuse again. That's not my conscious brain. That's my subconscious brain, the trauma in me trying to prevent me from becoming a potential victim again. And so I went through every single wardrobe change you can imagine. All of the fads. I was emo. I was hippie. I was a stoner. I did all the things. There was no same hair color. And it was just a protective measure. And it took so long in therapy for me and my therapist to recognize, that is why you did that. That is why you behaved in that way. And it was freeing for me to finally find myself for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine, just as a little person, you know, we all have these coping mechanisms that we develop that we can attach labels to, good, bad, otherwise. But at the end of the day, they help us to get through whatever we're getting through. So I don't even, I almost don't like to attach labels to things. Maybe it wasn't the most ideal, but it was what got you through that at that time. So I don't know if you have you heard of appease as the fourth trauma response?
Appease.
Appease. So fight, flight, freeze, appease.
This is where we're going to geek out. the episode that was J.C. Dugard and Dr. Rebecca Bailey talking about this.
Yeah. So they actually have just released a study where they have renamed that fourth trauma response appease because it's, when I explain it, you can agree or disagree based on your experiences, but it's almost more accurate according to most people. So the difference between fawn and appease is like this co-regulation. It's more of like a co-regulation to keep you safe. Whereas fawn is more like, it's like offender specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I really like the redesignation of that because when you're fawning, it's with anyone. I meet you on the street and my trauma response is I will categorically within moments start to mimic your accent, your mannerisms, your body language. And if we hang out enough, I will start wearing the clothes you wear in efforts to seem like I am a safe individual to be near and you will not want to hurt me, harm me, or disregard me. So I like that so much better than...
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to make it trend. We're going to make it trend, bitch.
Fawn almost insinuates that it's like this. I'm doing it to make you happy or to please you, where appease is like, no, I am doing this to make you think that I am safe.
Yeah.
So it's small, but...
Yeah. The thing that keeps sticking out in my brain is how JC talked about it. Was that she had to learn to think like a predator while she was their prey. Yes. And so outwardly, she's appeasing her captors. And internally, she hates it. She knows something's wrong, something's off in her gut. But I mean, and she was also taken much later in life. I'm not going to share her story. We've already talked to her on the podcast. It's episode 4, but phenomenal. And this just goes hand in hand with what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a listen, worth looking into. There's a study with Stephen Porges as well. So very interesting. Okay, so let's switch gears just a little bit. How did you get started on TikTok as the TikTok advocate? Because that's what a lot of people are going to know you as, the TikTok advocate. So how did that happen?
Honestly, like most people in my generation, quarantine happened. We saw our friends jumping on dancing challenges. We held off as long as possible because we all looked at them like, are you really going to be the middle-aged white mother on TikTok doing the renegade? Like, you're going to do that? And then eventually I was like, yes, I am. Sue me. Yes, I am. And it was so great in the first portion of it.
It was different.
Yes. Then. When I first started, I had a lot of mom content and I made parody and comedy skits of just being a mother and what it's like being a mom of four. And a lot of those took off. That's where my virality started. And then I shared a trend of what I looked like prior to sobriety and then what I looked like 10 years sober on my anniversary. And I had one person ask me, could you please tell your story? I think it would help so many people. And I shared my first person testimony in a 15 or 16 part series. And that got massive virality. And that is where the content of my platform completely shifted. I went from 8,000 to 9,000 followers to over 250,000 followers over the span of that 15-part series. And then I began a third-person perspective point of view called My Childhood Trauma POV. And it had regular virality and shot me up to over 1 million followers. And my content quickly elevated to elevating other survivors' stories, deep diving into things that need public servants to have more attention on. So I will leverage public pressure to get public servants to move. Legislation that people may not even know about because the news isn't covering it. And of course, my child safety series, where I do skits for parents to understand how you might have a conversation with a child about a particular concern. And then, of course, you know, everything from the sexual education spectrum conversation to resources that they can find if they're looking to navigate online safety with their children.
I love that. I love all of it. And it's also important. And I think that something that a lot of people, if they're not on TikTok, especially if they weren't there in the early days, I mean, the early days.
Back in my day.
Old timer.
It's just degraded so quickly, though. Like
us elder millennials remember.
Remember reading? It used to be so good. Everyone was nice.
Ooh. Facebook ad. You had to have a college. Millennials love to tell you that.
Not just anyone could sign up for Facebook.
Oh my God.
I should also say, before you answer this, before we started recording, Katie gets on and she's like, okay, where do we fall on the cussing spectrum? It's loud, like, safe space.
Well, because, I mean, they already know. They follow me. So I was like, you already know. Yeah. I like a well-placed F-bomb, but I want to honor your platform.
I mean, honestly, my husband and I have had conversations about this, and he's like, you know, we'll go back and forth, and he's like, do we need to cuss? And I'm like, yes, sometimes, like,
fuck
you
yes.
do. Like, when you look at your kid and you're like, what are you thinking? Versus, like, what the fuck is going through your mind right now? Right? Like, there, it's different. It's different. You know, I don't say that to my kids. I say it inside my head.
I'd rather teach my kids discretion than be like me when I'm like sixth grade. What's this word do?
Yeah. Perfect. I don't know about you, but I am feeling extra stressed and I would like to not cut my bangs this time. So how are you currently dealing with your stress?
When I realized that I was going to be reliving my trauma on a very frequent basis, I realized that maybe I needed something to increase my stress resiliency. I was lucky enough to find Cured Nutrition. I unequivocally can say it's changed my life and how I deal with stress. I know that sounds dramatic, but Cured is a brand that is high quality. They are full of CBD, adaptogens, and functional mushrooms. All three of those go into your nervous system and they actually calm your nervous system. So you feel a little bit more like a freight liner in the ocean, not getting rocked by the waves, as opposed to a rowboat getting thrown all over the place. And my favorite, Kim got to try when she was here in South Carolina, are the gummies.
I loved it, and I didn't expect them to taste so good.
They're my favorite for when you're feeling a little extra stress on top of your day. Cured Serenity Gummies have CBD, just like all of the Cured products, but they also have ashwagandha and L-theanine. Together, those three go into your system, and they just give you a nice, tranquil feeling.
I'm so excited to learn more about them and try more of their products now that you've got me hooked.
Yes, and for any of our listeners who would like to try Cured, you can go to curednutrition.com. That's C-U-R-E-D, nutrition.com. And you can use code KARA10 to get 10% off your purchase today. That's KARA10, curednutrition.com. Give them a try and let us know what you think.
Do you love Survivor's Guide to True Crime but can't get enough with just weekly episodes?
Well, we have great news for you then. We started a Patreon and it's called
Kim and Kara's Captive Audience.
We have three membership levels: Captive Audience, Dark Humor Aficionados, and Trauma Bonded. So you get to pick just how much of us you want to consume. We hope that you want to trauma bond with us, but if not, that's okay. We will gladly accept whatever support you're willing to offer.
And there's even a discount if you choose the annual option, where you will get exclusive quarterly merch.
And the merch is pretty rad, I have to say.
I do love it. Rock and roll. And we're going to make sure that we do a lot more live Q&As over there. We're really interactive, but we just love our Patreon community and we hope you consider joining. Learn more and join now by visiting SurvivorsGuideToTrueCrime.com or by visiting patreon.com/SGTC.
And for those of you who have already joined, thanks for being part of our captive audience.
Meow.
Okay, so the people that maybe weren't there for the beginning or just coming into TikTok or aren't even on TikTok may not be aware of this whole side of TikTok where you can really change people's lives. Mm. And this is what I would say you probably discovered when you shared your sobriety series and then have experienced a lot. So can you talk to what that feels like? I think there's a lot of, it means a lot. It's very important. It keeps us motivated. Sometimes it can also feel a little bit like a burden.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you feel any of those things.
Yeah. So, you know, starting at the beginning of your question, talking to the point that social media absolutely has the basis of having a positive impact, and being someone who talks about the spaces of social media that a child's likeness is not safe. And we're talking about the ways predators can thrive on the internet and the spaces where big tech have allowed them to thrive on the internet. This does not discount the very real work that people like myself, you guys, and millions of others are able to do from the internet. It is because of the digital age we're in that we are able to fast track information at the speed of light. People know more now about exploitation, human trafficking, sextortion, and everything under the umbrella that is the conversations we have because of social media. There are a lot of feelings that come with the pressure of the work that I do. I have open DMs and I've had open DMs since I started my TikTok account. I get thousands of messages a month from parents who are needing support and resources to survivors who are looking to report their abusers to minors who are being exploited and groomed online who are trying to figure out how to report it to the police or find a safe adult to tell.
My God, how do you manage that?
Taking care of my mental health. I have to navigate when I'm able to, when I have the capacity. And then often I will just ask for a larger measure of capacity. Everybody has something higher they reach to. For me, it's the good Lord Jesus. Yeah. And I just ask him to increase my capacity because I really struggle sometimes, but I'm grateful that I'm able to just turn my DMs off when I don't have the capacity. And I only work inside of it because when I don't, I end up in a manic spiral.
Thumbs up.
Thanks, so, bipolar depression.
It's trauma. That's fine. Listen, I've been trying to convince everyone in my life I have autism. And they're like,
that's called trauma.
It's like, but also, listen, like the amount of neurodivergence that goes undiagnosed when placed up against someone who has CPTSD because they are such a mirrored reflection of one another symptomatically. People with ADHD will just be diagnosed with CPTSD and go undiagnosed and untreated medication-wise, and then vice versa. It happens all the time. That's why I never got diagnosed with ADHD until I was 30 because of my CPTSD. They were like, oh, yeah, you're just a PTSD wastoid. And I'm like, thanks, bitch. I'd like some meds.
I'm like walking that line right now where I'm like, am I like just a little bit autistic and like a lot of bit ADHD, or is it just a lot of trauma?
I wish the healthcare system wasn't as stupid as it is and hard as it is to get autism diagnosis. I follow a lot of autistic creators and the loopholes that people have to jump through to navigate their own mental health, to understand themselves better, pains me.
Yeah.
So on that note, tell us a little bit about the steps that you took, because you had said that you were participating in therapy. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. So I was in counseling as young as kindergarten. And I actually started going to counseling, my school counselor, because I had friends that went. And I thought it was trendy and it was cool and it was fun to sit down and share your feelings with somebody. And that detail never came up. I talked about very surface things like how my class was and how the playground was and how my friendships were, and continued that pattern until I went from elementary school into middle school. And same thing, I saw the school counselor regularly and it felt good to have someone I could confide in. I just wasn't confiding in them the details of what was really happening at home. It was very surface. Things at home are fine. Things at home are great. My relationships with my siblings and my family are good. And it wasn't until my eighth grade year that my dad was finally prosecuted and incarcerated. And my school counselor wanted to vomit. I remember her telling me those words. I feel like I want to vomit and I don't know how to look at you and I don't know how to take care of you and I feel like I've failed you. And in that moment, I felt responsible for caring for my adult counselor's feelings and comforting them at the ripe age of 13 years old, that it's not your responsibility to know the information you didn't have. It's okay. We're good. I'm not angry with you. I wouldn't have even known how to tell anybody what was happening to me at home because for me, it was just a normal day. That's all I knew about what was happening at home. And for the longest time, I thought it was happening in everyone's home. I thought that this was normal. And that began a very long journey of me reading psychology textbook on the mind of molesters to understand more where that behavior comes from. I wanted to understand the why. I wanted to understand the why for more than just my own healing purposes, but primarily for my own healing purposes. I needed freedom from the spaces where I remembered my dad telling one of my siblings that he could have me as long as he didn't touch my older sister, because my older sister was my dad's. I will never be able to remove that from my brain, but because of therapeutic intervention, it no longer feels the way that it used to. It used to be a memory I'd touch and I was immediately disassociating. Now I can talk about it freely and it no longer bring me pain. I weep for the little me that didn't have a protector. I weep for the little me that the safe people in my life who were supposed to be making sure that I had a happy, healthy childhood, she didn't get that. But I reparented her. I hold her when she's struggling to recognize the world is falling apart. I am the one who has made her feel safe now in this body, even though she didn't feel safe in her little body. And it took a lot of fucking therapy to get there. But EMDR is the shit.
Yes, yes, yes. I finally got Kara on the EMDR train. It just took my therapist a while to get around to it. But I just have to tell you, I think it is so beautiful that you felt very realistically like you had to heal yourself and you had to go at it alone. And now you realize that you do have to go about it yourself. Like, you are responsible for healing little you and making her feel safe. It's again, it's that nuance of like, I kind of have to do the work myself. And it's like, yeah, you do. Like, you can have someone to help you, but at the end of the day, you heal yourself. And I just think it's so beautiful that you said that you are the one that comforts that younger version of yourself. I just, like, it makes me want to cry. It's just, it's so, so powerful. And I think so many people need to hear these messages, because a lot of people in society right now feel like they need someone to save them, or they need someone to heal them. And at the end of the day, you can have someone to help you. Like, EMDR is a fantastic tool, but you really have to do a lot of the work yourself. A therapist just becomes a guide.
Yeah.
And I think that's such an important message to kind of drive home.
Yeah. And, you know, I share this often with my followers who listen to my talks on therapy, particularly EMDR. It is next level healing. If this is your first time hearing about EMDR, it's eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It connects both hemispheres of your brain at the same time to unlock the memories that are trapped in your emergency button center of your brain. They do not get filed with the library of memories. They get filed into the emergency center. So when you go to touch the memory, you immediately go into a trauma response, whatever yours is, fight, flight, freeze, or appease. And the only way to address that is connecting both hemispheres of the brain at the same time, being approached with the memory, and then bringing it from whatever level it's at that creates that trauma response down to what I call the gray area. So when I go to touch those memories now, they're gray. They have no sound. They have no taste. They have no sensation. They no longer feel like a normal memory, but they especially no longer feel like a traumatic one that will inevitably end my life. The most important information about stepping into trauma therapy, you are going to be given tools and resources to help navigate life so you are no longer being ruled by your trauma. It is coexisting with trauma. It will always be here. I will always have CPTSD, but it is no longer ruling my conversations, my relationships, impacting the intimacy with my spouse, impacting my ability to parent, because I parented from trauma for so fucking long. It is now coexisting next to me. I get to look at my CPTSD and be like, no, not right now. Get the fuck away. I'm like trying to do this thing. Like, can you back up, please? I'm going to respond and not react to my kids. Thanks.
Can I have a snack? Yes. Can I have a snack? Can I have a snack?
It becomes a separate entity from me with all of the tools and resources. Those are things that you literally have to dig in a box and be like, okay, I know I have something here. I've learned this. Okay, I have to now apply it. You can go to as much therapy in the world as you want, but if you are not using the tools that have been given to you and taking care of the little you that was hurt, and maybe you weren't even hurt as little you, maybe you were hurt as 1 year ago you have to be the one to help navigate that inner person's healing in order to use those tools effectively in everyday life.
Katie, this is so beautifully put. Because these are the things that Kara and I talk about constantly, that we have folks on to talk about here, and just the conversations that we have with professionals all of the time. How you are stating it is so beautiful and eloquent.
I can see why people are flocking to you and flooding your DMs because they're going to see you as having all of the answers.
I do not.
I think they do. Well, exactly. And none of us do, but I've found that when someone says something or puts it in a perspective that maybe you haven't found yourself yet, you instantly feel that connection and as if they've got all the answers in the world. But it does. It comes back to you have to figure that out for yourself.
Yeah.
You have to reach backward in time and be the person today that you needed back then.
Yeah.
I love, love, love that.
Amen.
I'm still stuck on good touch, bad touch too.
Yeah.
Because dark humor time period.
Sink it in.
So I'm like the 1% of kids that DARE worked on. DARE to keep kids off drugs, right? And here's why. Not even because of the program. And I think of these because they were around the same time period that I would have watched them. But DARE worked on me, not because they came in and did Scared Straight, not because they're telling me of all the impacts that could happen on your lungs and stuff. It was because little third grade me is in the school cafeteria and we had pig lungs. One was one that had nicotine use and whatnot, and one is a healthy lung. And you had to stick your straw in and try and inflate the nicotine-riddled one, and there's all these holes, and it's not going to work correctly. And then you have to stick your straw in the other one, and you blow in, and you inflate the healthy lung to see the difference. DARE worked for me because when I tried to inflate the healthy lung, I didn't take my mouth off the straw, and it came back in my mouth, and so I always associated off the rails. I always associated smoking or doing drugs with a pig lung. And I'm just, that's the intrusive thoughts that keep coming back. And so I'm sitting here thinking though, like, that's all I could process in my little brain. When you see something like a good touch, bad touch video, and you instantly have something to relate it to put words to for the first time, I think that that's so profound. Is that what social media is starting to do for kids now?
Both good and both bad. Because of the work particularly that I do, I have a lot of minors who are recognizing what grooming looks like now. They recognize exploitation. They have a word for sextortion. They understand that they were involved in, you know, a sextortion scheme and now their intimate images are being abused online. They're learning things at light speed because of content like what we make and it goes on social media. But unfortunately, they're also experiencing sextortion scams and they're victims of CSAM and they're victims of abuse and many of them end up being victims of human trafficking because of what's happening online. So my hope is to continue creating education and awareness around this. So when minors come across my content, they know how to keep themselves safer and their parents recognize the imperative importance of walking alongside their children when using social media and the internet.
Yeah, I love that. I wanted to ask you, you said people come to you and you say, here are some resources. Here are some tips. If this is how you're feeling, maybe if there's someone listening and they're just feeling lost or they don't know where to start, what would you tell someone if they came to you today?
It really depends on what they're coming to me for. When you say don't know where to start, I get such a vast array of people who come to me. Some of them are in court custody battle situations where I get domestic violence survivors. I get sexual abuse victims. I get human trafficking survivors. I get minors who are experiencing physical abuse at home. It might not be sexual in nature. I have survivors of practically every type of trauma in my inbox. And I have a link tree full of resources depending on what it is that you're struggling with so that you can go find the suicide hotline. You can find the Polaris human trafficking tip line. You can find safe houses and resources specific to your struggles. I wish that I had more resources catered to all of the different struggles for all of the different humans suffering. And I'm grateful when people bring them to me and they say, this is an incredible organization we'd like you to highlight. We think that this is great for these needs. And I do as often as I'm able. But the conversation really starts with, I'm so sorry that you're suffering. How is your healing journey? Are you safe? Do you have safe people around you? What can I do for you? What do you need from me? And sometimes it's just a person to talk to. And I can absolutely be a person to talk to. Just send a few voice clips of love and reassurance and telling them to keep going. And I'm so glad you're alive. And sometimes just those words enough keep people going. I'm so glad you're alive. You have a purpose. You're supposed to do something great. In 1 year from now, you will not recognize the human you were today if you keep going. And other times it's more intensive. They need me to point them directly to a place that can get them to safety, that can categorically change their current living circumstances. And it is an honor and a privilege to be a space for people to process and to navigate.
I am so, so glad that there are people like you who have the capacity and the wherewithal to respond that way, because it is difficult. Because Kim and I get, because we are sharing our stories publicly, we get those messages as well. And it can be hard to hold them a lot of the times because they catch you off guard. Like you never know when they're coming. And it can be a lot to carry. So one question that we get asked a ton, and we actually talked about on our episode with Elizabeth Smart, is what is the primary advice that you give to parents for keeping their children safe? Because that is the number one question that I get asked from parents.
Yeah. So hands down, bodily autonomy and consent being stitched into the fiber of their being. A child that understands radical bodily autonomy and enthusiastic consent is a child that is not as easily groomed, and they are a nightmare for a predator. When they understand that their body is theirs, only they can say who can touch it and who cannot, is a child that feels safe to talk to their safe adult when someone crosses those boundaries.
And that's something that starts so, so early. I think we can never underestimate the importance of starting that. I mean, from the time a child is old enough to understand the words coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And then do you have programs or like protection mechanisms when children begin entering the internet realm that you recommend, or tips and tricks for parents?
If your children are able to unlock access to the internet, I highly recommend digital safety nets like Bark. Bark is going to alert you if your child is sending or receiving messages that have particular key phrases that would be worth alerting you. Talks of self-harm or suicide, bullying, inappropriate language, pictures that are inappropriate, or if you've been contacted from someone outside of your friendship network via email, instant messenger, DMs, or text messages. Digital safety nets are a great way for you as a parent to help navigate your children with the use of all that is the digital world. But it's also really important that you're staying up on active legislation that's holding big tech accountable so that we can see them do their part in helping protect our children, because they have a duty of care to do so.
Yeah. So let's talk about this legislation piece, because I think that it is something that can feel very overwhelming to even get into, to figure out, what do we need to do? How do we do it? What's even happening? Where do we start?
Yeah.
I'm not solely asking this for our listeners. I'm also selfishly asking this.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about this too, because being emotionally bound to whatever testimony that you're given, especially when it is something traumatic, adds a whole other layer onto this. So go into this portion of the conversation also with that in mind.
Absolutely. So let's start with my severe avoidance of anything potentially political. I was born in a religious cult, and we were told over and over that anything political was of the devil's realm, and to participate, you would be essentially enacting Satan's will on earth. Is there some truth there? I mean, I think we can all say snaps to that, but my lack of understanding politically kept me blind to the spaces that I knew we needed movement, and I knew justice was possible. And so I started looking into the legislation that was already in place that was harming existing survivors, legislation that was in place that was unsafe for children, and legislation that was being presented that was going to further make this world unsafe for children. And as I started looking into those and partnering alongside nonprofits that had law centers that were pushing legislation, I said, I want in on this conversation in a very big way. I want to bring a face to this piece of paper, because these assholes are looking at statistics every single day, and there's only one side of their brain that's being activated. It's time to start activating the storytelling side of their brain, where it can be humanized and they can have empathy and sympathy and they can feel emotion, because at this point, they are looking at nothing but numbers and there is no feeling that comes with that. It's so important that we humanize these conversations when it comes to child safety and survivor legislation. The most important legislation we're looking at right now for online safety for minors is the Earn It Act. And the Earn It Act is going to require social media platforms that have CSAM riddled all over them be held accountable in the place they're able to be sued by the survivors of CSAM, where Section 230 actually makes it impossible to sue a social media platform. And so the goal is to get Section 230 revised and have bills like Earn It put up. So this would categorically reduce the amount of CSAM that we're seeing available on the surface web across social media platforms. For those of you who don't know what CSAM is, it's child sexual abuse material. It is no longer called child pornography. Pornography is a constitutionally protected act between consenting adults, and children cannot consent. So we do not call it child pornography. We call it child sexual abuse material. Tell your friends, tell your grandma, tell your auntie. We're going to categorically change these words and this language because it's imperative for little bodies who are being hurt. That's one of the really important pieces. But then we have things like COSA, which is the Child Safety Online Act. Again, this is a space where big tech is going to be held accountable for the spaces where they have failed to keep children in mind when adjusting their community guidelines, parental safety, parental updates and resources. There is zero child in mind when making any updates to their platforms whatsoever. We see with cars, we have seatbelts and airbags and brakes now because prior to, there were a lot of injuries. With car seats, there are manufacturers who are required to make that car seat meet a certain regulation. And if it does not, it literally cannot be sent out or it is recalled. We have no legislation that would require social media platforms to have a similar type of recall or a similar type of recourse in place. When we see the Attorney General say that social media is categorically now labeled as a mental health crisis for minors. And we see the CDC release a report saying 1 in 3 girls have actively attempted suicide because of the way they are meant to feel on social media. We recognize that these social media platforms, their algorithms, if they do not make it favorable for you to sexualize yourself for the dopamine response that comes with the likes, the clicks, the shares, the views, and the comments, they will put you on a side of social media where you will be sexualized without your consent, regardless of your age. This is a pervasive problem that is also requiring social media platforms to give up their algorithmic basics so legislators can understand exactly how they're doing what they're doing and why we're seeing what we're seeing. When young girls say, I like a photo of my friend and I'm immediately sent on a feed and down a rabbit hole that is pro-anorexia content. Or I like a video and I am immediately sent down a rabbit hole that is pro-suicide content. It is feeding our children what it wants to feed our children. And legislation like this will hold big tech accountable for the places they're failing this generation.
That's it. Send tweet. There's so much to digest here because these concepts can feel really big and overwhelming when it's just someone maybe driving in their car, listening to the podcast or on the treadmill or however this content is finding them right now. What are some baby steps, first steps that they can take? Are there petitions? Are there websites to visit?
Yeah. So creators like myself and millions of others, but if you're looking particularly from my work that I do from my platform, I will always create calls to action and I will make it excessively easy for you to participate in that call to action. You can click on a link in my bio. There will be a pre-filled out email and based on where you are located, it will send it directly to your representatives and your senators. If what we're looking for is the public to create public pressure so public servants do their damn jobs, I will always make it so easy for you to participate. A lot of people ask, what's it like having like such a radically large platform with so many followers? And I'm like, I'm literally just some bitch in the middle of Wyoming with 4 kids. This platform is possible because so many of you are willing to participate in the calls to action. It is literally an entire group of people who have decided collectively together that the exploitation and human trafficking of women and children that was deemed a global health crisis by the World Health Organization is completely fucking unacceptable societally. And we are deciding that no more. We are going to use our voices to say, no more. When you participate in a small call to action, like writing a senator to move a piece of legislation or calling the FBI to tip them off on something that's happening on a social media platform, or calling a police department, asking them to finally reopen a case for children who are being actively abused in a home and have been handed back to their abuser. You are participating societally the way we all are supposed to, with a duty of care to protect our children. Nelson Mandela said, "There is no better measure of the soul of a nation than the way they treat their children." And right now, I'd say we have no fucking soul, because the way we've been treating our children is disgusting. But I am endlessly grateful for people like you guys and so many others across the internet who have made it a part of their mission to educate and to elevate and to help eradicate these issues.
I am so thankful for people like you who, like you said, you make it excessively easy, because I've seen how you do the call to actions, and you, like you said, you just click and it automatically fills your letter. It makes it easy, because I think it can feel like such a big job that it feels like, oh, well, what am I going to be able to do? Like, I'm just one person. And it's like, yes, but when we have a lot of us, a lot of one persons yelling loudly,
yes,
it gets louder, right? And so I think it's just so important with all the work that you're doing. And I just commend you. And I think you are doing God's work. Like, it's just, it is... Oh, I am impressed by the amount that you do with four children.
I know. I'm sitting here like, how?
grace of God, my ADHD meds. And let's be clear. I have something called Mount Vesuvius. It is Laundry Mountain. I pretty much can never get caught up. And that's just the life that I live. Often people are like, why don't you have an assistant? And I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Assistants cost money. Yeah, and what?
We should. And the reality is,
that makes me feel so better to know that you have a gigantic mountain of laundry.
I do.
I'm like, hey, I can't do these things.
You know, I get asked often, do I get paid for this work? I don't. Not my work that I do on TikTok. I'm not in the creator fund. I was initially. I haven't been in a while. I don't get paid from my YouTube videos. I got $1.20 from my video on Facebook the other day. That was great. I quit my $150,000 a year job to do advocacy full time. And the goal inside of the last 18 months has been to find partnerships with organizations that are inside of my lane to help not only legitimize my work, but to allow me to continue staying home, because the bills keep coming in. And that's the ultimate goal, is to be able to actually legitimize my work inside of this field full time with a nonprofit organization of some sort. And so we keep dreaming big. We keep doing this work. We keep hoping that that door opens. We know it's going to. And no, you do not have to pay me to talk to me in my DMs. I get asked that question a lot. I do not consult in that way. I will consult when I lobby. I will consult when I speak with representatives, and I will consult when I work alongside nonprofits who are looking to use a survivor's voice to get something across the line. Yes, I will consult in those manners. But if you are a survivor desperately looking for a place to just be seen and valued and heard and loved, you can pop into my DMs. I can't promise I can get to it right away, but I will see you, because you deserve to be seen.
Oh my gosh, that is exactly how it should be. And those are the organizations that can and should pay survivors for their voices, for their testimony. This is something that is incredibly emotional. And I love that you're doing your due diligence and checking out these organizations before you lend them your story.
Yep.
I mean, this is a huge piece of your heart, your soul, your life. And when you have organizations, which there are plenty of, that weaponize that and take it away from you and use it to their benefit instead of your own, I will step aside from this soapbox, but it can be re-victimizing and especially harmful.
It's actually a really important conversation to have when recognizing there are nonprofits out there that are not survivor-led, that are using the voices of survivor and testimony of survivor to continue campaigning for their purpose, to continue increase monetarily with donations. Survivors leave re-traumatized, re-victimized, and re-exploited all over again. And this organization now just increased their income by $100,000 and got asked to go on another campaign tour. And the goal is to bring in a handful more survivors, because these testimonies are powerful. Anytime I'm asked to work alongside a nonprofit organization, my first question is, are you survivor-led? And based on that answer, the conversation continues. Are you nonpartisan? Are you non-religious? What kind of legislation have you lobbied for in the past? Because this work is intersectional. Most people don't understand that if you're going to cry protect the children, it better be every fucking one of those kids. Because this particular topic, sexual abuse, sextortion, exploitation, and human trafficking happens primarily to our marginalized communities. So if you heard that just now and you're like, meh, but the gays are bad, shut the fuck up, dip out. Just so we're clear, it is imperative that we have legislation that protect these communities because they are our most exploited, our most trafficked, our most vulnerable. So do some research, do a little bit of reading, tippity-tap on the Google machine, learn some stuff. The more you learn, the more you will grow. The more you grow and the more you know, the more you will be able to actually be effective in helping in this work.
I had to be on mute because I was back here screaming and fist pumping.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Direct that straight into my veins.
I know. So there's our soundbite. So if people are looking for organizations that they can get involved with to follow, to keep an eye on, what organizations would you recommend?
So there are, you've got two different sides of the aisle. You have a non-government entity. They have their space in the government hand. The National Center on Missing and Exploited Children is a fantastic resource to get in touch with if you have non-consensual intimate images on the internet. This is a resource you can find in the link in my bio. If you are an individual who is looking for legal support because you are a survivor of sexual abuse and you need it to be pro bono, you can talk with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation out of Washington, D.C. They have an entire law center particularly dedicated to bringing down those who are thriving well in the digital space that are exploiting and abusing women and children, and being able to legally support the victims and the survivors of those particular situations. If you're looking for a nonprofit organization that is bipartisan, non-religious, and particular to your area, you're going to have to Google that. I always say the calls coming from inside of the house. Look locally who you have that's doing work. For me in Wyoming, it's Uprising YO. Uprising YO is non-religious, bipartisan, and they're working their ass off on making sure that we change legislation here locally that's harming our children. Right now, they just worked on re-elevating the conversation about child marriage. That's legal in Wyoming. Excuse me? So it just recently passed the Senate. I believe we're in like the third segment of conversation about it. And so hopefully that will pass. Previously, it was literally anyone under the age of 16 with parental consent could get married. And it was so protected for so long by people that I'm questioning. Like, bitch, I'm side-eyeing you.
Yeah. Yeah. Blink, blinkity, blink, blink.
So locally, just do your research. I always encourage you to follow the money. Oftentimes, you'll look at these nonprofits and some of the donations will come in anonymously, but find those that are not. Find those that are labeled the big number donation, dollar donations, and look at who those are coming from and what do they lobby for? What do they stand for? What matters to those people? Because if it's, and this has nothing to do with politics. You guys need to do everything inside of your brain to not be like, oh my God, it's the Democrats or it's the Republicans. Shh.
Yeah.
So we're clear. Yep. This happens literally in schools, in churches, in your yard, in your backyards, in your neighborhoods. It's happening in DCFS. It's happening in police stations. It's happening in our own government. The trafficking, exploitation, and abuse of minor children is happening in literally every single sector across the globe. And when you can recognize that, you're ready to do this work. But until then, when you're trapped in political brain, you can't get past those details and you can't do this work effectively. But if you want to find someone local to you, you want to track where the money's coming from, see what they truly stand for. And if they are not bipartisan and they do not recognize how this work impacts particularly our minority communities, that is not an individual that you want to be partnered with for this work.
I love making people do a little bit of the work themselves too. Because what you're doing there is you are forcing your followers to become critical thinkers. You're not just giving them something to parrot back. And ultimately, it can feel a little painful, like anything that is a growth point. It can feel a little painful whenever, you know, when you want an answer. I want you to say, go here, go there, right? But when
you have to take the responsibility to do your own research. One, you get a little more invested. Two, you learn some skills and you learn to critically think. And that's going to help you out as you go forth in this journey. So I love that you recommended that people go look for their local resources. That's fantastic.
I tell my people to be a researcher of the research. Don't take my word for it. Go find it yourself. And when they do, they are informed in a way that they weren't before. They are shocked and they're like, oh my God, what now? Like, I really didn't realize. I just fell down a fucking rabbit hole for 3 days. And I'm like, I'm really glad that you did your own research because you could have taken my word for it and thought it was this as bad as this 3-minute video, or you had an opportunity to see what's really happening. And I'm grateful to have you on this hill.
Yeah. I think this is exactly why Kara and I took months, and I'm not kidding, months to name this flipping podcast. And this is where we landed because it wasn't just a few words. It was an entire philosophy. Yeah. And we can be cartographers. We can make those maps and those guides for you, but you are the one that is going to be out there using what you hear here as a tool. You're going to be forging your own path. You're going to be finding your own way because your journey is not going to be the same as anyone else's. Yep. And that's why conversations like these and people like you are so imperative, because every once in a while, we just need to know that we're semi on the right track. Yeah. We just need to check back, but you are the one who is creating your own guidebook throughout this survivor journey. And I am so thankful that you have shared such an important chapter with our followers and with our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun. And I'm grateful for human beings like you who put yourself out there and you tell your story and you invite others to do the same. And you're doing it in ways that it's not just palatable, because this conversation is really fucking hard to swallow, but you're doing it so boldly and so authentically. And I really appreciate that, because I don't do curated very well. I like to go off script. I'm a fan of word salad. So I just thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for being here.
I mean, ditto. We feel all the same ways, because at the end of the day, life isn't curated, right? If you live this expectation that, you know, we only talk about pretty things, it's like this toxic positivity culture. Like if you live in that world, you're going to be sorely disappointed by the way your life goes. Like I hate to sound like a Debbie Downer, but that's just not the way it is. So if we don't talk about these hard topics and we don't talk about these messy subjects, then how the hell are people going to get through life?
And if you hear these topics and you're like, but I can't maintain joy or a healthy, stable mental health if we're talking about this shit all the time, so how do you? Gratitude. That is literally the only thing that brings me centered. Is if I am like, I feel myself sinking into I call them the darky darks. Like it is this place in my brain that is a void that I'm being sucked into and I have no control. I will literally stop everything I'm doing. I am grateful for this house. Thank you for this house. I am grateful for the heat. Thank you for the heat. I am grateful for a functioning refrigerator. Thank you for my refrigerator. And all of a sudden, I start slowly coming out of this space that feels like it will inevitably swallow me and take me whole. And I'm like, okay, I can function. I can get through this day. Yeah. So if you are someone who is listening to this, you are positively riddled in panic. First off, breathe with me. It's going to be okay. You are alive. We are here together. Everything is okay. Find some things that you're grateful for. Center yourself. And if you want to join us on this hill, we look forward to finding your headstone next to us when the work is completed.
I love it. I love it so much. And I'm geeking out so hard that you mentioned gratitude journaling, because that's like, people want to know, like, how do I start? Like, I don't know how to heal. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, some of the things really are just so simple. And I don't mean simple in how profound they can be. Like gratitude journaling is, or just a gratitude practice. You don't have to write it down. Just, it's so profound and it's so simple and it takes so little time and it just has such an impact. And I think that people forget those kind of things. Our final question that we ask every podcast, because we are Survivor's Guide to True Crime and because we are survivors of true crime, do you yourself consume true crime content?
I do not.
I pretty much
I do not. I particularly struggle with the vast majority of them that do not have the consent of survivors or the family members of survivors, the way it's sensationalized, the way Hollywood makes you want more, it's consumerism. And I know that there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, but this is something that we can't avoid for the respect of the survivors on the other side of the crime that took place. Now, for survivors who have willingly given their story and have asked that the American people or the world listen, I will if I have the capacity. But the vast majority is very sensationalized. And as a survivor, it's unacceptable.
There's so many sound bites.
Yeah, I think we can end there. Mm-hmm. That's like so much of the stuff that we talk about and how we ended up here is everything that you said. And like the exploitation within the true crime community itself is horrendous. Mm-hmm. And the people telling stories of the worst days of people's lives and going down rabbit holes, trying to explain why the offender did what they did. And then they're making money off of it. It's horrendous.
If you're an individual who makes true crime content and you hear this and your initial reaction is defensiveness, you want to blow it off, or you're like, well, I'm not that way, I just want to encourage you to listen to the voices of the people who came from true crime scenarios, actual victims, survivors, and their family members who are begging and pleading for their life circumstances to no longer be sensationalized or on display for the entire world. When they've been begging for decades and no one has listened, I think it's time to take them seriously.
Yes. Thank you.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Ah, she hungry, boss.